All right, welcome in. It's First and Ten, the podcast. I'm Matt Hayes on the Saturday Down South Podcast Network. Got a big show for you today. Special guest, one and only Mike Slide, former SEC commissioner, will join us in a bit. We're going to talk about a project that is near and dear to his heart, the Mike Slide Foundation for Prostate Cancer. We might ask him a few football questions as well. Big show. Got a lot to talk about. We got a big, big month stretch now in the SEC where Alabama, or as I like to call Alabama, the Death Star, gets four straight games against four coaches that, like it or not, are feeling some heat. And Alabama has a chance to do some damage to those four coaches. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the Georgia quarterback situation. We'll talk about how in the world Jim McElwain has that Florida team at 3-0 despite not having his two best offensive players and his best defensive player for the entire season. Before we go any further, though, I want to talk to you about TicketCity.com. These games are important to us. We all know that. We are now in the thick of the SEC schedule. These are the games that count. These are the games we love to go to. These are the games we invest in. Money, time, effort. If you're going to do that, if you're going to spend that Friday to Sunday weekend and go watch a little SEC ball, you got to go to TicketCity.com. Now, we've been working with Ticket City for a long time, and they are the experts in college football, having served over 1.5 million customers. They've been a place to go for SEC tickets for almost 30 years. Now, they're offering $20 off to all Saturday Down South podcast listeners. And all you need to do is go to TicketCity.com and enter the discount code SDS20. That's Sally Delta Sally 20 while checking out to save $20 on your order. So go to TicketCity.com. That's TicketCity.com and get your SEC ducats today. Okay, let's welcome in the most important figure in college sports development over the last quarter century, my friend, former SEC Commissioner Mike Slive. Mike, welcome to the First and Ten podcast. So good to have you here to talk about something so meaningful and impactful as the Mike Slive Foundation.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate being on. It's great to talk to you again after all, after we worked together and apart for 13 years. It's a delight to be on here. Well, you may know, Matt, that I had a very significant battle with prostate cancer, which included surgery, back surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, and I was blessed in a sense that I was able to get some cutting-edge research that saved my life after the cancer had metastasized on my spine. And so this is the Mike Slide Foundation for Prostate Cancer Research is my opportunity to make sure that as much as I can do it, to nobody, no other man has to go through what I went through. And so the goal here is to make sure that we can raise enough money to continue to help the researchers do everything they can to bring an end to prostate cancer.
Okay, and now before we go further, I want to give everybody the website. It's MikeSliveFoundation.org, correct?
Yes.
All right, and Mike, now, for as long as I've known you, you've always been someone who looks and thinks toward the next step. You're not always bogged down in the now. And clearly with your fight with prostate cancer, you're healthy now. You look and sound fantastic. At what point did you think, you know what, let's take this next step. How can I help others? And how did it unfold, the whole process?
Well, it unfolded. There's a lawyer here in Birmingham, a dear friend named Ed Meyerson, and he came to me and said, let's create we got to do something for prostate cancer. The women do such a wonderful job for breast cancer, and we're way behind in prostate cancer research and funding. And so we created something we call the Prostate Cancer Research Foundation. And then the board of directors, after we named it and were doing some work, said that would I be willing to lend my name to it. And I said I would. And I think part of it, Matt, is most men are really reticent to talk about prostate cancer, their own prostate, their own experiences. There's so many horror stories about what can happen, you know, with regard to incontinence and impotence and all the kind of things that people are really afraid of. And I thought maybe if I went out publicly and said, I've had prostate cancer, here I am, I'm a survivor. So if I can say, if I can go public with it, you can join us and you can help us raise money and you can be willing to talk about your own fears and your own issues with prostate cancer. And so once we put my name on it, obviously I was able to talk to some friends and others and some many of my friends in the media, such as you, that we were going to do this. And the goal here, Matt, is to bring an end to prostate cancer. The statistics are chilling. Every 33 minutes, a man will be diagnosed with prostate cancer. One in seven men will get prostate cancer in their lifetime. One man will die from prostate cancer every 20 minutes. This year, 161,000 new prostate cancer cases were diagnosed, and 27,000 men lost their battle with the disease. And so I thought about it, Matt. You know, you and I have been involved in athletics all of our adult lives. And I thought about this in terms of athletic competition. And so I've said that cancer is a formidable competitor. It's a big-time ball game. And I'll be damned if we're going to lose this fight. And so this is the beginning of the end of prostate cancer.
Well, that's unbelievable, Mike. So, I mean, you said that, and I kind of stopped me in my tracks right there. One in 20 men will die from prostate cancer?
Yeah, one in seven will get it. One man will die from prostate cancer every 20 minutes. 27,000 men will die from prostate cancer this year.
Wow. Wow.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, you know, those numbers are shocking.
They're shocking. And the insidious thing about the disease is it's asymptomatic until it's too late. In other words, if you're not monitoring your PSA or at least talking to your doctor as to whether you need a PSA or don't need a PSA, which is the blood, it's a simple blood test, and in the blood test they can tell it's a prostate antigen, and they can tell if it's in your bloodstream, and that's the so-called PSA that has a number. But if you don't do that, there's nothing to warn you until it's too late. In other words, you can go right along, and you don't. If you haven't done anything, the disease can be in your system. And what happens is prostate cancer cells attack the bone. They go to the bone. So when it metastasizes, like in my case, on my spine, it goes to your spine, it goes to your hips, it goes to your legs. And but you don't feel anything until it's too late. So part of what we want to accomplish is to let men know, you know, stop being modest and stop worrying about, whatever you're worried about. And make sure you talk to your doctor. He'll tell you whether he or she will tell you whether you should take your PSA, whether you should and how often, and give you some other guides to prostate cancer. Now, you know, if you get it, because then there are lots of different treatments. And every year, as a matter of fact, when I talked to my doctor the last time I was out for a checkup, I said, you know, doctor, what happens if my PSA rises again and I get in trouble? He says, Mike, we have ways of treating that now that didn't exist 3 years ago when you came here.
Wow.
So, but that's all, you know, contingent, Matt, on fundraising, contingent on research, contingent on making sure that we stay on top of this disease and someday get it. And we're so, you know, the women have done a wonderful job in dealing with breast cancer. They're not shy about it. They're not bashful about it. They go out and they talk about it, and they've raised millions and millions of dollars, and there's no reason we can't do the same thing for men.
They're just better than us, Mike. That's kind of the reality of it. I mean.
Well, they're a little quicker than we are. That's what it is.
So it's, I mean, I've had the PSA done. It's a simple blood test. Like you were saying, you can do it anytime. If you go into your doctor's office for your annual, just get the blood test and they take it and it's done, right?
Yeah, and then there's a, if you know, it, there's, and we're talking about men in their 40s or beyond, but then there's a baseline. So once you get the baseline, the doctors know where your baseline is, and it's fine. And then when they do the blood testing, as the years go on, they have something to compare it to. And God willing, you don't have any, you'll never have prostate cancer in your lifetime. But if you get it, then you know you're on top of it, and there are many, many ways to treat it. There's such sophistication now, and there's many ways to treat it. But what you don't want to do is let it get ahead of you, because that when that day comes, in my case, I started to lose my ability to walk. And all of a sudden, like, I had a hard time walking, and I didn't know what happened. And they took an MRI, and within 24 hours, they were operating on my back, and they did a great job, and so I walked fine. But, you know, I don't want that to happen to anybody else.
Yeah, I actually remember one thing that sticks in my mind was that first college football playoff, and I wrote something. It was a shame that you weren't there because you've done so much for it, and I mean that was really a tough time for you, wasn't it?
It was, you know, and the irony was I was operated on as the SEC network was launched, and I got up and we were you may remember, but we had a doubleheader, football doubleheader in August of 14, and I was in the hospital, and I said, you've got to get the SEC network, and they went all over the place, and now in the hospital here, it's on channel 85. I know where it is every time I go in there.
So, Mike, the Breast Cancer Foundation, they do such a good job marketing-wise, you know, with the 5Ks and 10Ks throughout the nation that they do. Is that something you're trying to do marketing-wise with the Mike Sly Foundation? I mean, will you go into sports? Is it possible that you could have a connection with the SEC as well?
Yeah, I think what we'll do is, you know, I'm sort of, you know, I'm new to it, as you know, and, of course, ignorance is bliss. But I think what we'll do is we'll be talking to many of my friends in athletics, SEC, and in other places. And I think an idea that you had, where you and your, you know, the national sports writers that you're friendly with and I know well, we might even try to come to you and ask you if you might come and do a forum or something that can help raise money. So, which was your idea, Matt, when we talked, and I appreciate it very much. And we're gonna think that one through very carefully. So we'll try to have something every year, but something a little different, you know. If you have a golf outing, then you're one of 150 golf outings. And so
right.
I know I'd like
right.
to try to do something different where it wouldn't be burdensome. And so I was thinking about, you know, sports writers, against prostate cancer or something. And so we're going to work on that, Matt. It was your idea, and I'd appreciate it very much.
You know what? Anything I can do, believe me. I'd be happy to help in any way. I mean, you are clearly one of my close friends. We miss you in the sport. There's no doubt we do. I know you're having a lot of fun in retirement. You know, I always think of that Saturday that we spent in your war room in Birmingham for a story I was working on, and when we watched those games together. Do you miss those Saturdays, Mike?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I was in the office yesterday I had some technical issues with my phone, and I was invited to the command center this Saturday, Matt, so... For the first time in 2 years, I'm going to go back and sit there, but I don't have to worry about, because nobody's going to be calling me on Monday. I don't know if it's Sunday or Monday. You know, people always said to me, they always say to me, boy, well, I wish I had your job. And I said, yeah, everybody wants to be me on Saturday and nobody wants to be me on Monday when the phone calls come in.
When coaches retire, Mike, the one thing they say is they miss the camaraderie with the players. And,
yeah.
And I mean, for someone like you, what do you miss most about it, you think?
I think that's a lot of it, you know. I think you know, the people I got to know and the people that are very supportive and friendly. And I made a lot of dear friends. And but I think if I miss anything, it's, as you know, I used to say, Matt, that for a commissioner, there's no such thing as today. Today's already been planned for. You got a lot of good people working with you to execute it. But there's always tomorrow. So I think if I miss something, it may be just some of the creativity that went into thinking about tomorrow in the next day and what the league's going to look like in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. But the reality is I owe my bride of 49 years, I owe her some time, and my granddaughter's 5 years old now, and I told my daughter that the word no will never pass my lips, so my granddaughter loves to come here. And so that's a wonderful part of my life right now.
That's fantastic. So you don't have to worry about the whole argument of when this playoffs going to eight teams. And no more of that, huh?
No. And I don't have to worry about whether that was pass interference or not pass interference, or whether that was holding.
So will we see you at the championship game in Atlanta? You think you'll be there?
I hope so. We're going to go to the Sugar Bowl for sure because the president, Stanley Kahn, is a dear friend of ours. And so we're going to go down and celebrate with him. It's a long climb to become the president of these bowls. And so he's the president of Sugar. And so we're going to go down and spend at least the Sugar Bowl there, whoever's going to be in it. And then, you know, I'll probably not decide to the last minute, but then it's only 2 hours from here to get to Atlanta. So I'll probably be there.
All right, so if you go there, I'm gonna go a day or two early, and we're gonna go have breakfast at Salem's Diner with our friend Wayne. And that's
that'd be great.
You ever get to Birmingham, everyone, Salem's Diner in Homewood, beautiful Homewood, Alabama.
That's right. Then we got a special spot for you. We have Mike Sly's booth, and I tell you, our annual breakfast with you and all your colleagues is one of the highlights of the year. It is at Salem's.
Awesome, Mike. Once again, it's MikeSlyFoundation.org. Please visit. Please donate. Please help the fight against prostate cancer. Mike, it's such a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Matt. Take care. Love to the family. Oh,
thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Mike Sly, one of the truly great men of college football in the last quarter century. Shoot, not just college football. Just a really, really good guy. Kind of hard to transition from something so serious and significant as the fight against prostate cancer to something so really insignificant when you think about it. Although, look, I totally understand college football is live and die for a lot of people. It's all about it. And I get it. So we will transition there. We've got a lot to talk about. First up on the list is the reality that is now facing four of the, I guess you could probably call them, the hottest seats in the SEC for coaches. Guys that really are in a situation where they've got to win. And they're staring at, you know what, the Death Star coming down the road in the month of October. So this month of Hide the Women and Children begins this weekend in College Station. Kevin Sumlin, Aggies coach, on the hot seat. The Aggies take on Alabama this Saturday, 7:15. A week later, Brett Bielema in Arkansas, they roll into Tuscaloosa. Week after that, Tennessee and Butch Jones, yep, they roll into Tuscaloosa. And then LSU and Ed Orgeron, who's coached all five games, and already there are those at LSU that want him out, already. And this is the reality for those four coaches. They're looking at an Alabama team that, two games into the SEC schedule, have won by a combined 125-3. And they're next. And you're talking about a team that, and I said this early in the season, and I truly believe it now, I think this might be Nick's best defense that he's ever had at Alabama. He doesn't have the big names on this defense. He doesn't have the guys where you're going to say, wow, that guy is going to play on Sundays for a long time. At least not yet. In a couple years, you might say that, or next year, you might say that, because a lot of these guys are young. This is a really, really good defense. And this is a defense that can dominate a game. And Jalen Hurts just gets better and better every week throwing the ball. He's more confident now as a thrower. Clearly, they can run the ball on anyone. You know, I think what Brian Daboll's done there has been impressive. Not just strictly calling plays, but how he's helped Jalen Hurts take that next step as a true thrower. They're playing really well right now. And I said this 3 or 4 weeks ago. I think I said it after week 2. After Clemson beat Auburn, I remember thinking, Look, we're in this thing. It's Alabama-Clemson again. It's part three. It's the redo in Atlanta again. The rubber match, whatever you want to call it. That's happening. I can't see anyone else beating those two teams. It could happen. Georgia could beat Alabama in the championship game. Clemson could fall to someone in the ACC, regular season, championship game. They lost to Pitt last year. Certainly could happen. I'm just not seeing it. Right now, instead of looking forward, let's look this month because that's what this is all about. Those four coaches and those four programs that are in deep trouble with the tie train coming down the tracks, baby, and it's coming down hard. And the problem is, here's the issue I think really more than anything for these four coaches. You're looking at four programs that all believe, without hesitation, people, that they can and they should be like Alabama. Tennessee and LSU have won national championships in the last two decades. LSU's won two. Tennessee's won one. Tennessee was national elite there in the late 90s, early part of the 2000s. LSU has been dominant since Nick took over and changed the fortunes of that program in the early 2000s and less continued it. You know, Arkansas, and I think a lot of people forget this, Arkansas was a half a football away against LSU in 2011 of winning the SEC West, then winning the SEC Championship game and playing in the BCS National Championship game before Bobby Petrino ran the program in his Harley right into that ditch. So don't think Arkansas can't do it because Arkansas could win it all too. At least they think they can win it all. You know, Texas A&M didn't spend $500 million in that palace in College Station. They're not paying their coach $5 million a year because they're trying to keep up with what Texas has. They think, and they think they should, be like Alabama, have the ability to win it all. That's the problem right now that those four coaches are facing. It's not just that they're not winning the games they should, but the product they're putting out, the bar is Alabama. So anything they do is being measured by Alabama. And that's really been the problem for the SEC the last three, 4 years, is the bar is Alabama, the ultimate measurement is Alabama, and no one has been able to hit that yet. That's been the problem throughout the league. That's why you're hearing this narrative that Alabama has made the rest of the league horrible. You know, the old saying of, the rising tide lifts all ships. Well, believe me, this rising tide is drowning everyone. And it's not, it's a problem right now in the SEC. Whether it's a real thing or whether it's a narrative, these guys are dealing with it now. Look at Texas A&M. The Aggies have won four straight, and someone is no better off than he was after week one when they blew the 34-point lead to UCLA. You know, last week, Texas A&M Chancellor John Sharp was talking to the Texas Tribune and was asked about someone's job security. His quote was, "I'm not the athletic director." This is the chancellor of Texas A&M. And you know, we have to do this every once in a while because I think some people don't know this. Athletic directors, everyone, do not hire football coaches. University presidents and chancellors hire football coaches. The athletic director will go with a report and say, "Mr. Sharp, here's who I think we should hire. Here are the other candidates. What would you like to do?" That's 99.9% of the time. Hires are not made in college football unless the university president signs off on it. So for John Sharp to say, "I'm not the athletic director," believe me, Alabama rolls into College Station this weekend and wins 45-10. John Sharp and the athletic director, Scott Woodward at Texas A&M, they're going to get real close over the next few days. Real close. By the way, the Aggies have given up, okay, in the last four losses to Alabama. 49, 59, 41, and 33 points. And this is a really good team going into College Station against an offense at Texas A&M that has not seen a defense like this against a true freshman quarterback that, while he's played well in spots, has no idea what he's getting himself into. Kellen Mond struggled last week against South Carolina. This is a completely different animal. you know, then you go a week later with Arkansas. And I've been a guy who's been on the side of Brett Bielema because I really believe he walked into just an absolute cesspool there. I mean, those players at Arkansas academically wouldn't even sign on, log on to the computer system to do their work. That's how bad it had gotten there when he arrived there. They literally would not even log on to the computer to start work. He walked into a very difficult situation. But again, that only holds water for so long. He's won 10 of his 33 career SEC games. That doesn't cut it. He knows that. He'd probably be the first guy to tell you that. He's lost to Alabama 4 straight years. He's got a 3-14 record against Alabama, Auburn, LSU, and Texas A&M, okay? Those are basically the teams the Hogs are chasing in the SEC West. Not cutting it. It's just not cutting it. And they've got a big game Saturday this week against South Carolina on the road. A game that really Arkansas has to win. Think for a second, if the Hogs lose that game against South Carolina, then Alabama comes. What in the world could happen once Alabama gets done with them? Then you're talking about a team that's lost to A&M, South Carolina, and Alabama consecutively. It could get very, very ugly. Then we go to Tennessee. And we all know what's going on with Team 121 and the 60-gallon trash can, okay? We all know where that's headed. After 41-0 against Georgia, after Butch stood there and blamed everything on the mean old media, and then his team tanked 5 days later, we all know where this is headed. A big loss to bitter rival Alabama in the third Saturday of October. Yeah, it's not going to be good. You get a big loss in that game, and you might as well just see, you know what? We're going to let Butch go. We're going to have an interim guy take the final month of the season, and we'll figure out who we want to hire. We'll figure out if we want to hire Chip Kelly or if Chip wants to come to Knoxville, even though, like I said this a couple weeks ago, everybody seems to forget that Chip Kelly was the same guy who paid a street agent $25,000 to steer players to Oregon and got a show cause penalty for it from the NCAA. Still, not an issue. Everybody just seemingly forgets about that. Might be a little bigger issue now with this college basketball problem with agents and middlemen and money changing hands, and maybe people might take a second look at Chip Kelly after what's going on. And then, of course, in the first week of November, which completes this month run of the Tide train coming down the track, it's the LSU game. And the biggest problem right now for Orgeron is LSU just needs to win. They just got to win. It's a talented team. It's a young team. But once you get in a situation where you're starting to lose that confidence, that idea that you can win, when you got guys going out there that are expecting to not win, that's dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. And a big problem for Ed Orgeron, who again, and I think it's absolutely ridiculous that we're talking about firing Ed Orgeron after 5 games of his first year at LSU. But a big problem is that Alabama game, he's going to be compared to last year's Alabama game, where LSU played magnificently, struggled like all get out on offense, but lost the game 10-0. Played Alabama better than anyone other than Clemson. And he's going to be viewed against that lens, as well as however badly Alabama beats him. That's another issue that he's dealing with. I mean, these are four coaches that literally could have their coaching career shaped by what happens over the next month. And Alabama, the Death Star, and I lovingly say that, the Death Star, could play a huge role in that. Huge role. Alabama is the bar, everyone. And Alabama is what, and I would say this, at least half of the SEC teams think they can be, think they should be. You know, in fact, I'd be willing to bet there are 10 teams in the SEC. 10. And now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, I think there are 10. That their idea is, yes, we can be like Alabama because we have the facilities, because we have the money, because we have the support, because we have the ability to recruit at an elite level. I mean, we already talked about Arkansas. We already saw how close they were. So you got to include them if you're talking about the West. So in the West, you've got Alabama, Auburn, Arkansas, LSU, and Texas A&M. That's what? That's 5. I don't know if I can get to 10. I might be able to get to 9. In the East, you got Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and I truly believe South Carolina is at that point where they think, you know what? We have the facilities. We have the money. We have the support. By the way, go to a South Carolina game. If your team is playing at South Carolina, go to that game and check out their facilities. You'll be shocked. You don't spend that kind of money right now in this league if you don't think, yeah, we can win big. Yeah, we can win a championship. And if you win the SEC championship, you get to that playoff. And who knows what happens once you get to that playoff. That's what those four coaches are dealing with. That's what those four gentlemen who are clearly dealing with pressure right now to win. Guys that need to win to keep their jobs. All four of those guys looking at Alabama coming down the track in the next month. It's a brutal business, man. It is an absolutely brutal business. But when you're sitting there sputtering and you're desperate, the last thing you want to see, the very last thing you want to see is that Ferrari, that crimson Ferrari, rolling past you in the passing lane. It just magnifies all the problems you have. To the point of a guy who's five games into his first season, they're already talking about paying him off. I mean, think about this. You know what it's going to cost to get Ed Orgeron out of LSU? $12 million. That's the buyout, okay? So it's going to take some big booster or boosters to fork over $12 million. And imagine how bad that's going to look at a university that over the last 3 or 4 years has been dealing with significant fiscal cutbacks. All that's going to do is just make everyone in academia at LSU feel so good, feel so special and so loved. Nothing will underscore the aura of football above all else in the SEC than firing a guy after 1 year and giving him $12 million to not coach. Basically, what I'm telling you, everyone, is it's not going to happen. I mean, LSU could literally lose out and go 3-9. He's not getting fired. You can't do that. You can't pay a guy $12 million to walk away with all that's gone on the academic side at LSU, with all the fiscal cutbacks. You can't do it. Okay, it's time for the picks portion of the program. Struggled a little bit last week. 2-3, dropped below 500 for the season at 12-13. It's a little embarrassing, got to be honest with you. A little embarrassing. Not easy to pick against the spread in the SEC. This isn't coin flip, people. It's not winners and losers. You're picking against the spread. Not easy. All right, let's start out with LSU at Florida. Gators are given 3.5 points. I'm liking Florida in this game simply because it's in Gainesville. I think Felipe Franks is going to play with a little confidence. And I don't think LSU has enough offensively to push the Florida defense to get them to the point where they're tired in the second half. That's been the problem with the Florida defense so far this year, where offenses can do enough, can be balanced enough to get them tired in the second half where they wear down, especially if the offense can't move the ball, which is clearly what Florida's problem has been the first few games of the season. And I think when you're looking at LSU and you're looking at that offense, it's just so dysfunctional. The quarterback situation with Etling and with Miles Brennan, and really with just the whole idea of what they want to do. I mean, Matt Canada is a terrific offensive coordinator. You're paying the guy $1 million to go there. Let him do his stuff. And I think that was Ed Orgeron's biggest mistake so far. Last week when he informed Matt Canada, look, I eliminate some of those motions and some of the different schemes, because I think it's confusing our offensive linemen, our young offensive linemen, and that's his offense. That's what it's all about. It's like, think of the Boise State offense, same kind of thing. Shifts and motions, and, you know, a lot of teams do that. You look at Mike Leach. Mike Leach has probably 7 plays in his playbook, but he's got 100 different shifts and motions, 200 different shifts and motions that consistently and constantly, I should say, keeps defenses guessing. So if you're the head coach, you cannot go into the OC's office and say, look, man, you got to stop with the shifts and the motion. It's just not good. Because then you're changing everything that happens. LSU scores 0 points against Troy, big bad Troy last week in the first half. Halftime rolls around. Orgeron says to Canada, you know what? You can shift the motion again. They scored 3 touchdowns in the second half. So the possibility, the potential is there. I just like Florida and Gainesville and the whole dysfunction of that team right now. I mean, you have a players-only meeting. Orgeron meets with the AD. Apparently, they meet every week. Then the players have another players-only meeting. Then the AD and Orgeron meet with the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator. I mean, look, I'm not good at time management, but I would think that why don't you guys just all meet together once, hash it out, hug it out, move on. Not happening there right now. All right, second game is Arkansas at South Carolina, a desperate Arkansas team, and really a desperate South Carolina team. South Carolina played better than Texas A&M last week. Now, the second half, South Carolina couldn't protect Jake Bentley to save their life. And that's going to be a big problem this year, because you cannot have a talent like Jake Bentley and not get to the point where you protect him. They have got to protect that kid or he's going to get injured. Simple as that. And I think they know that. I think it's clear right now. The problem is they have a lot of injuries on the offensive line. They're shifting guys around and they can't get any continuity out there. And Bentley's the guy who's taking the hits because of it. That last series, they had the ball with a minute or so to go, no timeouts, but they still had a chance to go down and score and tie the game. That last series was brutal. They couldn't block anyone. Anyone. And that's going to be a big problem. I'm not sure that Arkansas has got the D-line to disrupt as much as Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M's defensive line is much better than Arkansas. But if Arkansas scores and they run the ball and they do some good stuff up play action, and they get ahead, you know, they'll drain that clock. And I think that's a tough spot for South Carolina. But I will tell you this. I'm going to take the Gamecocks in the 2.5 points. I'm going to take the Gamecocks because it's in South Carolina. I think they'll play better. I think Muschamp's going to have that offensive line whipped up, ready to go. I don't care who's on that in that group. He's going to have them ready to go. Our third game is Alabama, -26.5 at Texas A&M. I mean, 5 years ago, Texas A&M wins that game in Tuscaloosa. Could you ever have imagined 5 years later, A&M's a 26.5-point favorite at home in College Station? Hard to imagine. And you know what? Last week, I took that, and it was like 27 points, but in my eyes, it looked like 40-something. So I took those points against Ole Miss and just got humiliated. And you know what? I'm laying those points this week against Texas A&M. I think Alabama's going to go in there and play another fantastic game, and it's going to be the first of 4 guys getting the nod on the head from the big Alabama train coming down the track, and it's not going to be pretty. All right, next up is Georgia -17.5 at Vanderbilt. I think last year in this identical situation, you're nervous about this game. This year, considering what happened last year as well, this year, I'll lay those points all day long. You know what? Watching Vanderbilt play at Florida, I thought Vanderbilt would come out after getting just crushed by Alabama. I thought they'd come out and play hard and think, you know what, let's bounce back. And that team looked like a defeated team. And I thought they played well in spots, but they really, really struggled. And you know what, I'm giving up that 17.5. I mean, I like what I see with Georgia clearly. And we're going to talk about Georgia's quarterback situation in a little bit, and I think that's going to be something that's going to have to be settled at some point. Georgia on defense is just fantastic. One of the top 5 defenses in the country. Dogs playing really well right now. I'll lay that 17.5. Final game is Ole Miss at Auburn, -21.5. Auburn playing much better offensively I think Stidham's playing with a lot more confidence. They still don't, in my opinion, they still don't do enough to get those guys spread, the offense spread a little bit so you can allow Stidham to do more of what he does best, and that's throw the ball and make tough throws and make NFL throws. They're still bunched up a lot. And again, that's Gus's offense, and I get it. He's been successful. It's hard to criticize that. But I think when you've got a talent, an NFL arm talent that Stidham has, and a guy that can throw with accuracy like he can, you know, I mean, I think you got to spread the field a little bit, and you got to let those receivers win. And when they win on the outside, you know, watch how efficient and how impressive Stidham becomes as a thrower then. All right, so the five games to rehash, I'm taking Florida -3.5 in Gainesville. I'm taking South Carolina, the home dog. They're getting 2.5 against Arkansas. Laying 26.5 to Texas A&M against Alabama. Georgia laying 17.5 at Vanderbilt. Auburn giving 21.5 against Ole Miss. Again, 2-3 last week. It's embarrassing. I get it. 12-13 for the season. I'm making a return right now. Here comes the big, big turn for the picks. All right. All right, let's move on to Georgia. And this is something that I think is going to be an issue for Georgia until we figure out what's going on with that quarterback spot. And I think you really have to look at this from a non-emotional standpoint, okay? We always look at things right now. I'm just talking about sports, society, everything. Everything is looked at through an emotional lens. If you can just step back and look at things through a clear point-by-point situation, it's a lot easier. I know what Jake Fromm has done. He's clearly played well in a tough spot, a really tough spot for a true freshman in this league to go on the road and have to play a very good Notre Dame team. And I said this 4 weeks ago, Notre Dame is a really good team. Notre Dame might win 11 games this year. And he went in there into South Bend and won that game. It was impressive. But if you get beyond the emotion of the backup coming in and winning games and everybody's happy, and everybody loves the backup, okay? Everybody loves the backup. Let's just deal with that and move on, all right? So let's get beyond that emotion right now, and let's start actually looking at tape. If you look at that Tennessee game last week, again, 41-0, we all get it, okay? Jake Fromm made some mistakes early in that game, some key mistakes. Tennessee dropped 2 interceptions. Believe me, you're throwing 2 interceptions early against Florida or Auburn or Alabama, you may not win those games. And I think that's where you got to start looking right now. Jacob Eason won the job in fall camp, okay? Jacob Eason has NFL arm talent. Jacob Eason can make every throw. Jacob Eason had a very good season last year. He struggled in a couple games. What true freshmen don't? I think you've got to go with the guy who can, number one, make all the throws, and number two, more importantly, in this entire scheme, this entire grand idea, Jacob Eason has seen defenses that Jake Fromm has not. He has seen these SEC defenses and what these teams like to do. There's still stuff out there right now that Jake Fromm has not seen. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal when you're talking about Florida still on the schedule, Auburn still on the schedule, Georgia Tech still on the schedule, and Alabama, if they make the SEC championship game, is still on the schedule. That's a big, big deal. And to me, if all things being equal and they're both healthy, and from what we can understand, Jacob Eason's healthy right now. If Jacob Eason is healthy, he should be playing quarterback right now. He's the guy that gives them the best chance to win games. And I know that Jake Fromm has won games so far. I know he went to South Bend and won that game in Notre Dame. But we have to walk away from the emotion a little bit of this thing. If you stand away from it and you look at it with a critical eye and you see it wasn't just the Tennessee game. Jake Fromm missed throws in all those games. He missed a couple open touchdown throws against Notre Dame. So I think you have to look at it with more of a critical eye than an emotional eye. And I think if you do that, it becomes very clear who should be the quarterback at Georgia. And speaking of emotional versus critical, what's the last thing I want to get into here? It's about the Florida situation with Jim McElwain, and the critical side of the fan says, It's year three of Florida, and they still don't have an offense. Still doesn't have a quarterback. They still can't score points. Still doesn't look like Spurrier. It still doesn't look like Meyer. Believe me, I live in Orlando. I've been around this program a long time. I know the way these people think. That's the way they think, okay? But I want to tell you something, and listen to this. Think hard about this and listen to this, okay? Again, let's not deal in emotion. Let's deal in facts and look at things specifically from a point-by-point, realistic, here's what's going on basis, okay? Now, I'm going to say something to you, and think about this, all right? Think about any team, all right? Any team not named Alabama or Clemson, okay? Let's take those two out of the equation because clearly right now it's Alabama, it's Clemson, and there's a giant whoop drop to number three, okay? So anyone other than Alabama or Clemson, all right? You go ahead and tell them, let's tell Auburn, you know what? You can't play with your two best offensive players and you can't play with your best defensive player. Tell Ohio State that. Tell Oklahoma that. Tell Washington that. Again, anyone other than Alabama or Clemson, take away those three players from that team and say, all right, go out there and win games now. Because that's what happened with Florida. Now, granted, two of those guys that Florida lost, it's their own fault. Knuckleheads. You know, you credit card fraud with wide receiver Antonio Callaway and tailback Jordan Scarlett. But the reality is, Callaway and Scarlett, if they were playing, would be two of the best offensive players in the SEC right now. So you're talking about losing two of the best offensive players in the conference that has the most elite skill NFL talent of any. All right? And those guys are gone now. And you're talking about they're gone from a team that Jim McElwain said, you know, during fall camp and even in summer, that he thought this was his best team. This was his best team talent-wise. This was his best team chemistry-wise. This team was a team that he thought could do big things. And I've never heard McElwain talk like that, not only since he's been at Florida, but when he was at Colorado State. And the very few times we got to talk to him when he was at Alabama, because Nick's assistants don't talk, Jim has never been a guy to come out and say, yeah, this is a great team. I like this team. I like where we're headed. This is good. So him saying that, you should understand that and think, wait a second, he's got a pretty good team right now, which is what everyone was thinking, all right? So he loses Callaway. And then on the Tuesday of game week against Michigan, they still think they've got everybody else other than Callaway and those six other guys. On Tuesday of game week, he's told that Jordan Scarlett, who in the grand scheme for him was going to be way more important than Callaway, and Callaway is an elite player, all right? Jordan Scarlett was a guy who over the last 9 months got into the best shape of his career, was a guy who was finally ready to become a 25 carry back, to become one of those Derrick Henry, Mark Ingram type backs, Richardson type backs at Alabama that they have when, you know what, it's third and two, we need 2 yards, give it to Jordan Scarlett, he'll get the 2 yards. He was going to become one of those guys that rushed for 1,300, 1,400 yards, and he was going to be the reason that it was going to be easier for Felipe Franks to play quarterback because they could throw off play action. They were ready for this. They were going to build this offense around Scarlett. Tuesday game week against Michigan, he's told, guess what? Jordan Scarlett, part of that group of players again. So now he's out. Now let's revert back 3 weeks earlier. First week of fall camp, his best player, Marcel Harris, on defense. Best player, safety. Terrific player, all SEC player. Blows his Achilles out. He's gone. And now that Florida secondary, which starts two freshmen at corner, or plays significantly two freshmen at corner, a secondary that literally cannot locate the ball on defense and struggles in tackling, is without their best player, a guy who could calm things down, who could get guys in position, who could work with the young guys on the field during the game. Teaching a guy, like, you know, the quarterback on the field is the quarterback on the other side. He could be a strong safety type guy who will, okay, here's where we are. Here's where you need to be during the game. You need guys like that. Plus, he's a terrific player. Gone. And now, think about the criticism, the emotion. Again, we're not dealing with facts now. We're dealing with emotion. Think about the criticism of McElwain because Florida's got to use a Hail Mary heave to beat Tennessee because Florida needs Kentucky to blow two coverages to beat Kentucky. But you know what? The Gators are 3-0 right now in the SEC. 3-0. And if they play well this weekend against LSU, they're 4-0. without their three best players. Again, go to Auburn, go to Ohio State, go to Oklahoma, go to Washington, go to Michigan. Go wherever other than Alabama and Clemson and say, you know what, we're taking your three best players away. Now, go ahead. Let's see what you got. So again, I think sometimes we focus in on stuff way too much with emotion and not enough, nearly enough, with a critical eye. All right, that's going to wrap up this week. Had a lot of fun talking with Mike Slive. Again, that's MikeSliveFoundation.org to go and learn more about the fight against prostate cancer, to donate to the fight against prostate cancer. Enjoy the games this weekend, everybody. Look forward to getting back with you next week and doing it all over again.